Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. I'm your host, Sam, from that YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and in this week's episode, I'm going to be joined by Sam Davies from UK Minis. I've teamed up with Sam for a very exciting giveaway he's doing around classic, but also relatively new, let's call them modern classic minis. We're going to come on to it when I chat with him. He managed to dial in via Zoom, of course, still corona restrictions in the world, meaning that not every single guest can come to the studio to record. So instead, we did the sort of traditional corona style interview, which was over Zoom, which I'm sure you're all used to in your ways or walks of life. So yes, very shortly, I'll be cutting to that interview and that chat. It's a fascinating conversation because I'm not someone who I think knows that much about the world of classic minis. Sam, on the other hand, owns 26 of them. 26 classic minis. He's a bit of a madman, but an enthusiast, and he taught me a lot about that world, but also shared some exciting news about his sort of UK Minis Instagram page and these giveaways that he's doing, which give, you know, people the chance to kind of keep living the mini dream. Because as he explains in a second, it's harder and harder for people to get into classic minis these days. But before I roll the interview, a few things to kind of announce or to say. Firstly, a huge thanks to those of you that have signed up to the Behind the Glass Patreon. You are just unbelievable. I know if Tony was here right now, he'd be thanking you as well, but he's got a busy week at work, hence why I'm having a chat with Sam instead. But yeah, we were both blown away by the kind of reaction and the amount of people that have signed up in varying levels. Just a reminder, in case you're new to the podcast or missed last week's episode where we explained that we have set up a Patreon. For those of you that want to sort of support the podcast in some way, get involved, there are varying levels. You can suggest topics for Tony and I to discuss. You can join us for live Q&As each month that we'll be doing separate to the podcast. You could even end up being a guest on the show. So yeah, go and check it out, patreon.com/behindtheglass. Aside from that, if you want to continue enjoying the content without having to support it in any way or donate or contribute any kind of money, well, you can, because we are here for free on YouTube. So make sure you hit subscribe and turn on notifications. And if you're listening audio only, thank you so much for tuning in, and keep listening on whatever platform you are, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it might be. But for now, I'm going to stop talking and tune us in to my chat with Sam Davies from UK Minis. Sam, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to Behind the Glass. We'll kick things off for my audience watching on YouTube. Tell us, where are you? Where are you in the world?
So I'm based in South Yorkshire, just outside Barnsley.
And where are you podcasting from today? Within, are you in your house or are you in your office?
I am, yeah. So well, you can see the sun. I'm in my conservatory, yeah, which is where I do most of my, you know, I run all my businesses from here and, you know, stuff. You can see the mini stuff in the background. So yeah, so it's a bit warm actually, believe it or not.
I can imagine you might start sweating. It is July, so maybe you've made a really awful choice as somewhere to be during this podcast. And in terms of lockdown, has that been your kind of base? Have you been out and about? Have you had businesses that have been meant that you've been able to leave the house, or have you been stuck
there? Yeah, so, predominantly I'm sort of warehouse based for my main company. And then I have a few chain of shops as well, which have obviously been closed during lockdown. And I suppose the lockdown, like everybody, I suppose, you know, there's been pluses and cons. But for me, actually, it's been a massive sort of time frame period of reflection. And, you know, it's actually been really, really nice and really, really positive. My girlfriend is, she works in the NHS. So,
oh, wow.
So for her, it's been the total opposite. She's been absolutely, you know, snowed. So for her, it's been the opposite. And for me, it's been,
time to step back. And it's been weird, that, hasn't it? It's been a sort of time for perspective and given us all the chance to review. Well, not all. I mean, you know, as you say, some people have been working exceptionally hard, harder than ever, and helping us all. So, yeah, we have to applaud and thank your girlfriend. But one thing which I know it's given you the time to do is kind of, well, get a bit carried away with your love for minis.
Yeah, I think my long lasting love, should we say, certainly the longest relationship I've ever had, has been, you know, like most relationships, hot and cold over the years, but it is certainly with the classic mini. My mum would laugh if she heard me talking now, because she, you know, famously tells this story that when I was 10 years old, I went to a school in the Wychwoods, which is in Oxfordshire. It was called Wychwood Primary School. And she pulled up outside, pleased as punch, in a brand new Mini 1275 GT that my dad had just purchased for her. And I come tumbling out and said, "What the hell is that? I'm walking home."
It's amazing.
To which she said, "Well, bloody well walk home then." To which I then did, believe it or not. So at the age of, I think she said, she always says I was 9 or 10 or something at that age. But weirdly, sort of from that moment forward, and obviously then eventually getting coaxed into the car and all the rest of it, I've just had this, long-term love affair with them.
I think it is probably bordering on obsession. Now, I did introduce you by saying you're a man who owns, is it 26 minis?
Yeah, give or take a few. It changes fairly frequently, but effectively, yeah, I have 17 that I would say are perfect. That includes some particularly rare and specialized models. And then I've probably got another 9 or 10. I've actually got another 2 arriving tomorrow. So,
oh my God. This is not a love affair. This is an obsession.
Yeah. And they're in varying sort of states of restoration and so on and so forth. You know, I've got them all over the place, being projects on the go and things. But I have the reason I justify to myself to keep buying them is I have a side project other than UK Minis, which is called the Mini Museum, where effectively half of my warehouse is null and void. I don't use it. So that's where my cars currently are. The plan is to open that up to the public eventually. When hopefully I get in a position where I can retire semi-early, and that will be my sort of passion project.
I love it. Amazing.
Well, so yeah, by that stage, hopefully I'll have a couple of hundred.
I was going to say, I mean, it sounds terrifying, if I'm honest. You don't need a small space to put them all in. But look, let's go back to the start, because when we first started speaking, I kind of admitted the fact that my knowledge of the classic Mini is severely lacking. Obviously, an iconic shape, an iconic car through popular culture, but also for petrol heads. But there have been so many sort of variations and iterations and modifications that have happened to that car over the years that, yeah, I definitely lose track and never quite sure what I'm looking at. But I just want to start things off with, I suppose, your journey. How did you go from that 9 or 10 year old theoretically loathing the Mini that turned up at your school to someone who quite enjoyed one, and then I guess went out and bought your first one? So yeah, talk us through that.
Yeah, so like you say, it was a loathing. I don't know if it was the color or the style or what, but you know, believe it or not, that the 1275 GT is probably, well, it is the rarest Mini to get your hands on now, and it's fast becoming one of the most expensive. I wish to God that I still had that car.
What happened?
My mum still had
your mum sold it?
Someone ran in the back of her, actually. So that was the end of that thing, unfortunately. Obviously at that time they were worth, you know, nothing, effectively. Really, it's my brother's fault, to be totally honest with you. My brother Scott, he's a little bit older than me, so he'll be, I think he's 40 this year, actually, believe it or not, which is a big number for him. But he had Minis from probably about 14. He had a Mini we have a separate dad, different dads, and his dad had brought him a Mini to restore for his first car.
Nice.
he was a mechanic, my brother. So, or obviously not 13, 14, he wasn't, but that's what he went to
so
do.
So they started me on.
He was just constantly tinkering with them. And to be totally honest with you, you know, in the back garden, we'd drive it back and forward, you know, and I was like, say, 10, 11 years old and being given the opportunity to, you know, go 10 yards in a car at that age was quite good fun. So I sort of just started to get an affinity for them, and being around him a lot of the time, you know, tinkering with them. And he's a real mechanically minded person. I'm not, just so you know. I'm the polar opposite. Although I did do my apprenticeship at BMW in 2001 on the new Mini.
I was going to say, surely on the Mini side of things, surely.
So, but that was more of a computer-based mechanics course, to be totally honest. And I only did it to keep my dad happy from, well, basically, so he didn't throw me out and I had a job. So I suppose it just grew through that. And then obviously we found ourselves, where I'm from is quite close to Cornbury Park. And they have an annual Mini show there, which was called Mini in the Park. And I was lucky enough to actually go to school with one of the daughters of Lord Rotherwick. So
well played.
She made me aware that this thing was happening. I didn't know anything about it. And my brother was like, God, yeah, that would be amazing. So we talked our dad into taking us. And I think I must have I was still at school. So I was probably, you know, 15, 14, 15, something like that when I went to the very first one. And that was it. I walked around and was snapping photos on I don't know what
I say. It would have been a brick or a potato.
Yeah,
at that point.
And you know, I had to take him down to Boots to get him, you know, go into Whitney in the Oxygen to get them produced and wait around for 9 hours or whatever the hell it was at that time.
Amazing.
And that was it. Yeah, that was it. That was where my love of both photography and the classic Mini came from, really. And that just continued. Obviously, my very first car was a Mini. H779YCP. Just if anybody hears that and knows of that car, DM me because I want to buy it back.
Okay. My first question was going to be, is it still in the collection? And yeah, clearly it's not.
No, so. It's gone. Yeah. Well, I had a bit of a tragic story, really, actually. I had quite a major crash on the A40 that the wheel came off.
Oh my God.
It was quite a bad crash. I was in quite a bad way.
No way.
I spent some time in hospital from it. And, anyway, yeah, long story short is, so that car was then restored by a company in Whitney in Oxfordshire. And anyway, I was doing my apprenticeship at the time and I was lucky enough to be given, or I had to pay out of my monthly salary to have a Cooper S at the age of 17. So as part of the apprenticeship scheme, they offered you them a discounted rate effectively. So I was obviously straight on that at 17 years old. So I was kicking about in that. So, you know, the Mini just took the back seat effectively.
But as somebody who had, you know, been working on and kind of started a new love affair with the classic Mini, what were your thoughts when you jumped into that 2001 car? Because it was quite controversial when it first launched under the sort of BMW umbrella.
You know, there'll be your listeners probably won't have much of an opinion on this, but the guys who follow me, who will probably listen to this as well, are going to be throwing things at me when I say this. But effectively, you know, the new Mini has been very, very good for the classic Mini. It's been very good for it in the aspect of, you know, bad press is never bad press. You know, yes, it's not a Mini traditionally, you know, and it's certainly not in its design features, and the, you know, its design brief was not obviously the same as what the classic Mini was, because we were in different times. So, you know, in sort of intuitively, my instinct should be to say, I hate the bloody thing. But I can't, you know, I've owned them. I've just literally got rid of a John Cooper Works brand new one that I had from new, because I ordered a GP3.
Nice.
Which, you know, yes, they're not Minis, you know, the only thing really that they have in common is the name and the bizarre, you know, modification of the looks, I suppose. But they are fantastic cars. You know, anybody who's ever driven one would say, you know, they're fantastic. And the early ones, especially when I was actually at BMW Cowley, was, they were really good, because BMW went over the top with the quality of them, because obviously they knew the Germans
they had a big community
and they knew that there was going to be a lot of criticism of them, especially from within the mini community. But you know what, we're 18, 19 years later on now. And I think that it's, you know, it's almost a classic itself. So it's fast becoming, and there's a lot of people who own, you know, both who own new and old now. And all the mini shows and so on and so forth that we attend throughout the year, they all now include, you know, that we call them the binnies in the industry. I've always actually wondered if that's because people think they're rubbish or if it's because of the BMW mini.
I was literally about to ask, is it because they're going in the bin or is it because of the BMW part? But
I would imagine it was probably started because of the bin side, but sure. You know, as time's gone on, you know,
people have been kinder.
And for me, you know, being from a similar area or knowing the area that I'm from, that BMW Cowley, obviously when it was BMC, before it's been Rover, it's been, you know, Leyland, it's been everyone basically, is and has been and will remain for a very long time a huge local employer. So my dad was a bit of a traditional guy. He was like, you know, get a trade. I loved cars. You know, when I was at school, I wanted to sell cars. That was the ultimate dream. Which doesn't sound very, you know, aspirational now, does it, when you think about it?
hey, everyone's allowed their own goals.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the time, that's what I wanted to do. And he said, well, look, you know, do an apprenticeship and then you can go and do, you know, prove to me that you've got a skill effectively. And you've then always got that to fall back onto. So that's what I had to do. So I went and did it. And to be honest, I enjoyed it. You know, I'm just not a mechanically minded person. So,
sure.
You know, the practical side, I sort of, I struggled with, I think.
With your own cars, you're tinkering?
Yeah, so I'm constantly tinkering now. And it's quite remarkable the knowledge that I now have about A series and A plus engines. But I just think that's through being around them for such a long period of time and really having seen most problems. There doesn't tend to be many problems that I think, bloody hell, that's got me perplexed. So it's stood me in good stead.
Is that something that's sort of appealing or maybe why the classic Mini has been so approachable for so many years or so many people have jumped on them? Because they are relatively easy to run and to use and to modify and to tinker with.
Completely. Yeah. I know you're a classic car owner, but you know, I suppose it's a different level of classic car, but actually
I would call it a modern classic.
Classic. I think I would say that the attraction of classic cars, unless you're a collector, is that own home maintenance. That's all part of the experience of the ownership journey. And I think that the things that we'll get into in a little bit about the values of the minis is that the attraction to the mini is that you could buy one for 50 quid, you know, 15, 20 years ago. When I was looking to buy my very first car, you know, my dad paid 300 quid for it. And they were so accessible at that stage and they were so easy to fix if you had a tiny inkling. But again, there was the Haynes manuals and all the rest of it, that all you do is buy a Haynes manual. And as long as you weren't a complete moron, you'd be able to work it out yourself. So I think, 100%, 100%.
That was one of the big appeals. And you sort of, you talked about sort of value, but obviously in a bit, we're going to come onto the sort of the giveaway and the UK minis side of everything that you're doing. We were chatting a few weeks ago, you were kind of talking me through some of the cars that you've already given away and some of the cars in the collection. And you started saying things to me and I felt like I was really embarrassed. I was like, I have no idea what he's talking about right now. Different engines and model numbers. And you were just on your flow. And it would be like me talking about Ferrari paint colors. I get it. Like, you know, we all have our thing. But so talk me through that quickly, you know, in terms of desirability? What are the rare cars? What are the cars that people are looking out for? Because for me, the Mini that would catch my eye in an auction or a showroom would be like an ex-Rally Monte Carlo car, you know, like that kind of motorsport heritage.
Yeah. But I think obviously, you know, I suppose the big name is Cooper, you know, John Cooper, you know, that is synonymous with the Mini. In 63, when he got his hands on one, well, 62 is actually when he got his hands on one and started developing. He had the Formula One team at the time. And he basically, you know, made the Mini what it is. If it wasn't for him and you know what he did to the cars, and then obviously the Monte Carlo Rally win in 64, basically made it a cult legend. You know, even that early on, I don't know how much you know or how much your listeners will be aware, but the Mini went on sale in August 1959, and the sales were horrendous. People just didn't get it, I don't think. And it wasn't until they had the you know, Cooper got his hands on it and started tuning it, and you know, and people started being able to whiz around the streets of London in them, and then obviously then the Monte Carlo Rally win in 94 just put it on a, you know, a different level. A different stratosphere, really.
Sure.
And then the celebs got their hands on them, and the rest is history, as they say. So I think, you know, the major name in the Mini world, and you know, rarity, obviously, as you've touched upon, you know, the rally, historic rally cars, you know, those values are mind-boggling.
Sure. As all sort of historic racing or rally cars are.
And, you know, something that would have cost 500 quid to build, you know, to buy in 64, you know, they converted them for relatively cheap money back then. You know, well, I don't mind telling you, I've recently been offered an historic Monte Carlo rally car, didn't win, okay. £300,000. And you are completely paying for the history and the provenance.
Of
you know,
course.
There's no actual intringent value to that car. You know, yes, the car, you know, I've got a historic racer being built at the moment, that's probably going to be 50 to 70 grand. But the car has that value, and obviously, if it is successful in that industry, and I can get it on the podium, and so on and so forth, you know, the values go straight up. But as an actual piece of, you know, value, the cars are, you know, they're worthless, you know, because they're so cheap and so easy to repair and so easy to replicate. You know, there's not so much recently now, but in recent years, there's been quite a few problems with people, you know, creating, let's say, you know, 1964 John, you know, Mini Cooper S's, Mark One Cooper S's, and then for a time there was, you know, there was more registered than that were ever known to be built.
Always interesting. That reminds me of my time.
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, but that happens, I think, in every. You know, when cars start to become valuable, I think it happened, you know, you'll know in the Ferrari world, there will be cars that are, you know, that aren't right. And that's kind of concerning, but I don't think anybody ever thought the Mini was going to be worth, you know, the values that it's worth today. So,
well, that's kind of what I wanted to come on to. I was going to say just briefly that your story there reminded me of a time in Malaysia when I went to see a private collection where 17 cars were all on the same registration. And I was like, something strange was going on here. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But yeah, because over and over again, I guess, during this podcast so far, you've kind of been talking about the fact that the cars are or were accessible, easy to work on, they're fundamentally cheap to build, but nowadays, as you just attested to with the historic rally car, kind of all classic Minis are starting to appreciate or command quite a high value. And I think this is something we're seeing across the industry with sort of all makes, but you've really been, well, you sort of said not frustrated but disappointed to see Minis almost getting priced out of their target market. Is that kind of happening?
It has happened, I think, is the best way to describe it. I think that for me, one of the real frustrations, and what we'll get onto in a minute about the competitions and things, is about accessibility and how do you create longevity for, you know, what I deem as a cult classic, you know, and it's a national treasure. The Mini is a national treasure, same as the Land Rover, same as the E-Type Jag. You know, you could argue the Aston Martin DB5 and, you know, and the Germans have the Beetle and so on and so forth. There's a gazillion, isn't there? But you know, the Mini holds a special place in people's heart because pretty much anybody you've ever spoken to has had an experience in a Mini. And that is what I love about them, because I can have a conversation with absolutely anybody in the world. You know, I get regular DMs on a daily basis that turn into full conversations, and have, you know, over the years have become really strong friendships based upon, God, that looks like the one that my granddad had and he run me to swimming in it, or, you know, whatever it is. And that is, you know, for me is why I love them so much. I think that the issue that you have when they become collectible and desirable, which is what's now happening to the Mini, you know, there are still, you know, don't get me wrong, you still buy cars, you see them changing hands for 500 to $2,000-$2,500 type of thing. But, you know, it's a basket case. It is literally, you know, they're death traps. You know, you wouldn't ever drive them down the road. And then you've then got to spend, even if you're handy, you know, you've got to spend probably $6,000 to $8,000 putting it back together, new panels, new, you know, all the bits are very, very cheap. It's like anything, you know, the thing that costs the money is the labor. So you have, if you haven't got the skills yourself, and a lot of home mechanics aren't quite as thorough as they as they probably should and could be.
Sure, cut some corners.
Yeah, so I think that's probably, you know, so a lot of the time you see these really fantastic looking Minis that are, you know, commanding, I don't know, 10,000 to 15,000 as examples, probably the average of something that's reasonably nice and restored. If you were to have that done by a professional, you'd be looking at 20,000-25,000 to have that done. So quite rightly, the value, you know, the spend doesn't, you know, return the value. So financially, you literally, you know, you're just doing your brains in constantly on them. So unless you've got the skills, and what you then find is when you have a little bit more of a, you know, if you know what you're looking at, and you look at all the places that should be right that aren't right, you know, you could buy a car for $10,000, drive down the road for 3 months, and it'll be rotten.
Yeah,
you know, in the floor.
You'll fall through the floor on the A40.
Yeah, and you're like, what the hell's happened here? Yeah. I just bought a £10,000 car. But it's just purely because the job hasn't been done correctly.
And you would think buying a car of that age and that kind of money, you think, oh, this must be a good example. Because if I was to go now and look at used Mini prices and I saw one at $20,000, I'd be like, what a joke. That must be a freaking, you know, that must be in the Prince Albert of Monaco's private car. Like, there's no way, that's just a bog standard thing. So you could see how people would, almost get conned into maybe thinking a car's better than it is, because it's hard to believe. Yeah, old classic Minis are now kind of trading for that much. What you just mentioned there, you know, if you didn't know what to look out for, would you have, like, I don't know, your top three or your top five, if people were thinking about potentially buying classic Mini? Because they're still so appealing, as you say, they're such an icon. If it's on a t-shirt, people immediately recognize it. If you go anywhere in the world and you talk about Mini, people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So people still want them. You don't have to be like a hardcore petrol head to want a Mini.
No, definitely not. And that's why, you know, when I was referring to that everybody's had an experience in one, it is exactly that reason, because I can guarantee you that if you and me went out and you went out in your Ferrari and I came in one of my Minis and we stopped somewhere, 95% of the people would say I'd rather the Mini.
Yeah, I know, a million percent. And they'd probably come and look at it as well. No one looks at my 360.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, that's just an example of your particular car. But even if we spoke about, I don't know, Tim's, you know, Senna or whatever.
You're so
right. It's exactly the same thing. It holds this special place in people's hearts.
Of course.
And, you know,
it's intriguing. And if you haven't experienced, you want to know, what's it actually like? Can I sit in it?
Yeah.
What's, oh my God, it really is that tiny. And oh, wow. Like, so it's got that intrigue factor as well.
Definitely. And the genius design behind it, you can get four adults in a classic Mini. And I'm telling you now, it's more comfortable. You know, I've had some seriously nice cars, and, you know, it's more comfortable than my C63S coupe to drive a Mini.
Because there's a YouTube series in that somewhere. There is a YouTube series.
and it's, you know, it is that exact. It's just, and, you know, yes, if you're, you know, I'm 6 foot. And I would say that after is sort of an extended period of time, if you don't have the seat extenders on, my legs start to hurt because of the actual driving position. You know, you're kind of like that with your legs.
Sure. it's not traditional, but, we'll say. It's not traditional.
Yeah, it's not good, you know, and your knees are under the steering wheel. But it's just, you have to drive one. You know, that's the thing with them.
It's a unique experience.
Yeah, I can't remember what we were talking about originally.
No, well, I was trying to see if you had tips for people who are going out there and considering buying one nowadays, especially with the world, like, you know, firstly, we're all being advised not to take public transport. But, you know, in a city living, I'm such a fan of smaller cars in the city. And so I can see the appeal. So I do think, you know, hey, if the price is going up, that means that demand is going up. So yeah, come on, what would your tips be as someone who owns 26 of the things? If I was going to go browsing, what should I be avoiding? What should I be looking out for?
So effectively, it's everything underneath on a Mini. You know, so the front and rear, so your buyer, you know, your listeners won't know, I suppose, but effectively, the Mini is a floor pan. So it's a body that sits on two subframes, a front and a rear subframe, which effectively has all your running gear. And they are connected by four bolts, simple as that. You know, there's a couple more connection points, but so you have a front subframe and a rear subframe. Now they are expensive to buy and replace, but really the major cost is having that done, because it is a specialist job. Everything has to come out of the bottom of the car to do it. So the first thing to look at, other than the actual condition of the body, which is, you know, really self-explanatory, you walk around, you see rust. On the Minis, they go in particular places. So, well, I was going to point them out, but they go everywhere.
But the
major places are around the front of the headlights. There's like a seam well between the wing and the front balance. It's sort of like an S shape. That's where they collect water.
Okay.
So they always bubble around there. That's the first thing to look at. Again, along the front of the bonnet seam that sits on top of the grill. It's a perfect collection point for water. You know, touch wood, you tend to, the bulkheads tend to be quite solid on them. But the roof guttering, so on the roof of a Mini, there's a lip effectively. It's about, I don't know, a centimeter tall.
Sure.
And again, if you don't dry the car off, if you do drive it in the rain, it just sits there. Wow. And it will rot through. It's as simple as that.
The insights to life as a Mini owner. Go on.
Yeah. So the boot floor, that's really the major area that goes on a Mini that is really quite expensive to do. And that is purely because, you know, Minis weren't built for longevity. So they had no wax oiling or anything such like from the factory. They were literally, you know, galvanized. Well, some of the floors were galvanized, but they were, you know, steel cars that were just painted, primed and painted. But, you know, take out on a road, a bit of salt, and that's it.
Gone.
The bottom of the car, and it's gone. So, the major, you know, the major things are the front and rear subframes, and that's really quite self-explanatory. Get under the car and have a look. You know, if it's shiny and black, and it's got relatively good mileage on it, that's feasible. If it's shiny and black and it's done 150,000 miles, it's been replaced. But generally, they have surface rust. If it's got surface rust, you know, it's a negotiation point, effectively, on the sale price, because it is a costly thing to do. Other things, obviously, that, you know, the condition of the body is self-explanatory. With Minis, you can't hide rust, you know, because of the shape of the car. You just can't hide it. You know, it bubbles. You'll see a bubble. If you touch the bubble, you know, it's rust. And if you think of a 5p pence piece on the rust bubble is probably about a foot underneath.
Wow.
Of corrosion. Now, generally, that's surface corrosion, because the bodywork was so terrible and the paint jobs were so terrible on them.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot of the time, you know, it's really in sort of the last 2 years, it's been really interesting what the mini industry's done. It's gone from restoration is the way forward because effectively they're better than when they came out of factory after they've been restored. By somebody who knows what they're doing, was what everyone really wanted. So, you know, the crazy priced Cooper S's that go between £30,000 and £50,000 as an example, for a nice example, you know, people were snapping them up. Private car collectors, you know, as we know with the economy, as it, you know, the first thing that people do when it starts to look a bit shaky is they buy assets, art, wine, chocolate, gold, you know, whatever the hell it might be. And obviously the classic car, you know, two classic car collectors, a £20,000-£30,000 car that's going to be worth £40,000 next year is actually a better investment at the moment than something like a DB5. So I suppose, so that naturally pushed the prices up. Now what's happened is it's all about originality. You know, people want unrestored cars because they're only original once. And actually, if you can get an original car, and you have the provenance that shows it's original, and there's things that you can look at on the, you know, the shut lines of the doors, the internal paint finishes, you know, behind the dashboard. And, you know, there's lots of things that you can look at to find out if the car is original, and certainly if it's got original paint on it. And most bodywork that was done was always done very cheaply because the minis were cheap cars. You know, they were throwaway items, really. So if it got a hole in the floor, they just put a plate on it. Now, anybody can spot that.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, anybody can spot that. You just literally look underneath, and if there's a big circle in the middle of the panel, you know that it's had a, that somebody's, you know, it's been restored or it's been repaired. And yeah, now it's all about originality.
Sure.
And the value is in that. You know, if you've got a, if anybody who's listens to your podcast, you know, has got a, an early mini with reasonable miles that they believe to be original, they are now, you know, the golden egg, effectively.
It's hilarious because it's a bit like the Defender. You know, the amount of farmers or people or families out there, you know, maybe outside London, who have run Defenders and maybe, as you say, classic minis, just, you know, as part of their life for so long, have no clue that now that might be an insanely desirable and collectible car. So yes, those of you listening that might think, oh yeah, God, that's granny's old mini outside that we just can't get rid of. Have a think again, because you never know. You could be sitting on an absolute goldmine.
Yeah, I think one of the things that still to this day, I get messages, you know, weekly with people asking me for rough valuations for their cars for the insurance company, because the insurance company has recommended they should have an agreed value. And I'm thinking, do you not think you should have an agreed value?
Yeah.
You know, these things are so valuable now that, you know, to replace that like for like, you know, it's almost double the value of what the actual car is, you know? So if a car's worth 10 grand, to have it built and replaced, it's going to cost you 20.
Of course.
You have to have the insurance value at that, you know, at that amount. Yes, you'll pay a little bit more on your premium, but you're talking 10 or 20 quid over a year.
It's worth having that reassurance.
It's just a no brainer. And there's, you know, there's people, I had a guy, in January, a mini fair, who has a 59 mini, and I was stood talking to him, and he said, "Oh, just out of interest, you know, what would you say as well?" I said, £15,000 to £20,000, you know, for a sort of a quick sale. And he said, "Oh," he said, "I better sort my insurance out." And I said, "Why?" "I've got insured for £5,500."
Oh.
And he just, and I'm like, and he must have been in his 60s. He might have even been 70 years old. He's owned the car from new, and you just think there's no, I guess because he's not in the market for one, he's not looking at what they're doing.
You know what we should do? There's a great opportunity here. Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah.
You can be Mr. Mini, I guess I don't know what I'll be. Maybe Mr. Ferrari, but I think I'm that knowledgeable. Because I would love to see the faces on people. It's like, you know, old like Aunt Ginny comes along. She's like, oh, yeah, that old man, since 1974. And you turn around and say it's worth 50 grand and she has a heart attack. Yeah. Like, honestly, it's one of those bizarre things. But look, I want to move on slightly because I can see the enthusiasm pouring out of you. But we need to kind of come on to the reason, I guess, why we're doing this podcast, which is the sort of giveaway. But to preempt that, let's just talk about UK Minis itself, because you had all of this kind of passion, this knowledge, this collection growing, and then, as you say, this passion for photography, which earlier I knocked by assuming you were trying to take photos on a camera phone when actually no, there you were with a proper 35mm. So just talk to me, what is UK Minis? How did that part of your sort of your obsession with both photography and the Minis come about?
Yeah, so UK Minis was effectively started in January 2016 on Instagram. It wasn't actually started by me. It was started by a guy called Liam Andrews, who will be very happy I've just named him.
Go on, Liam.
Effectively, so he started it. I'd obviously was quite well known in the mini scene of that, or locally within the mini scene at that time, because I was part of Oxfordshire and Abingdon Mini Owners Club. And obviously, you know, I was going to mini shows and, you know, I had a lot of friends within the industry. I had quite a nice mini that was well known within the sort of industry. And I'd obviously been taking photos for a long time, you know, for probably, I don't know, God, maybe 10 years, 12 years. Obviously, you know, technology had changed. I was taking them on a little crappy 35 throwaway 35 mil to begin with. But actually that's given me a really good base for the photography I do now, because completely unwillingly and unknowingly, I actually learned quite a lot from using that camera that I can now imagine. I have a massive film, you know, obsession now, film camera obsession. Obviously I've got my phone and, you know, the DSLR and all the rest of it. But unknowingly I learned quite a lot, which was interesting. But anyway, I found myself people saying to me, oh, you know, that photo you took of my car, do you mind if I can have a copy of it? So I was like, oh, yeah, okay, why? And they were like, oh, well, we've not really got any of mine. And, you know, the pitch phone qualities of the cameras then in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, well, they were just potatoes, weren't they?
Exactly. That was my assumption earlier. But yeah. no wonder people were asking you for copies of your photos. Because, yeah, back then, you know, phone cameras were just...
They were horrific, weren't they? Horrific. So I was still using the traditional film camera at that point. I've got a, what is it? It's a BCA, Patika BCA 35mm camera that I've still got now. And, wow. And it still takes killer photos. So I found myself being asked to send people pictures. So I started doing that, and that sort of grew. And, you know, people would say, and this is, you know, bear in mind, this has always been a hobby. It's never been, it's never been a business. I got to know Liam and what he was doing with UK Minis and the world of Instagram, which I had no idea about Instagram at that point. I was a little bit new to Facebook, but I'm not a huge social media. I'm not going to say
consumer,
fan.
User, no. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. User. Yeah. Probably more of a user, just because I'm so busy in my life that I don't have time to take photos and show everyone what I'm doing. So it's kind of like that. So as it grew, it grew quite nicely for Liam in the first year. And started to get a bit of traction, and he started doing obviously merchandise, stickers and so on and so forth, hoodies and caps and, you know, all the normal type of stuff. And then I think he found that he was being asked for advice on quite a regular basis. And he has quite a good job. So anyway, we got talking one day and he said, you know, I think I'm done with UK Minis basically. You know, he knew what I was planning to do with the mini museum. And at this point, my collection was probably at about 8 or 9 cars, something like that. And this is in late 2017. So he'd had it for coming on to 2 years effectively. So we had a conversation and he sort of said, you know, give me some advice effectively around, you know, the number of posts that need to be done, you know, on a daily basis and all the rest of it. And I was like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. I can do that. So I took over UK Minis. I don't actually know what I did. I think it might have been about January 2018. So I think he'd probably had it 2 years. I think I've had it about 2.5 years now, maybe slightly longer. It might have been in late 2017.
Sure.
So I took it on, tied it in with the idea of obviously there, you know, the followers that Liam had at that point was about 22,000, were sort of my target market effectively for the mini museum. Now the mini museum is going to be run as a museum and a non-for-profit organization, but it also needs to make money for me to be able to sustain opening the doors and letting people in and all the rest of it. So I I'm hoping it will become cost neutral effectively.
Sure.
And any money that is made will go back into growing the collection, you know, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I found that I took that on, and quite quickly, the page started to grow. I don't know, not massively why, to be honest. I don't think I'm just doing anything particularly different to what Liam was doing. I think Liam had just got to a stage where he'd had such enough of it that he probably wasn't giving it his all.
Sure.
And, you know, I found that, you know, people would message me and I'd be like, because I was new to Instagram as well, in my normal business life, I'm very due diligent and I survive on integrity. I always find that, you know, my phone pops up and I'm like, oh God, somebody's messaging me. And I'm on it within, you know, within a minute type of thing. And I think that that's grown, you know, within the community, and people have become aware of it. And today I think we're up to about 45,000 followers.
Amazing.
So it's grown really nicely. It's completely organic.
And as you say, completely relevant and target audience, you know, because you're not going to follow that page unless you're really into your minis.
Yeah. And I think for me that it's about growing the community online. And obviously, you know, it's called UK Minis, but actually I don't even know what my following from around the world is. I'd have to have a proper dig into it. But I would suspect that maybe 20, 25% are, you know, from outside the UK.
Sure.
And I get, well, messages from the strangest places in the world with people saying, I've got a mini.
It's the beauty, you know, beauty of social media, the absolute beauty of social media. So how did it then lead on to the giveaways? And I guess this is the exciting part of the podcast, because we're sort of teaming up. Basically, we're going to be offering listeners, you beautiful listeners of the podcast, some special discounts on entries for the giveaway. But sort of hype it up, give it your best sell now for, I guess, where the idea came from and the cards you've already given away, and then the opportunity for the listeners this week.
Yeah, so I think the idea effectively comes from, you know, there's always a financial drive to everything that we do, because there has to be, because otherwise things don't work if there isn't a, you know, financial drive behind it. But predominantly the reason why I've decided to start doing giveaway competitions is that the community needs it. And if we're not careful as a community, we already are, in actual fact, pricing the younger and the next generation out of the cars. And it's not right that car collectors and the people with all the money just come along and buy all these stunning minis up. You know, there's always going to be the pure air at the top, as such in our society, who quite rightly should have the very best, because they look after them how they should be looked after. And most car collectors these days allow people in, you know, there's obviously a few exceptions to the rule who won't, but the majority of car collectors like to show their cars. So I think that is a very positive thing within our industry and within our community. But the negative side of it is that, you know, a basket case now that your dad might have brought for you 15 years ago that for 20 quid and spent a year building it with you before you passed your driving test, creating a love for the car and a love for the community and all the rest of it is becoming unattainable now, because they're 2, 3, 4, 5,000 quid, and you can buy a Fiat 500 on a 60 plate for similar money that, you know, touch wood, you know, won't ever break down, and obviously is safer and, you know, all these other things.
A more attractive proposition.
So as the community is growing and, you know, the values are becoming more and more, you know, larger, for want of a better expression, it's becoming more unattainable. So, you know, and I get people messaging me every day saying, I've got £1,000 to buy a mini. And I'm finding myself saying to them, I'm really sorry, but
no chance.
You've got no chance. And if you're lucky enough, I get obviously offered cars every day, at that sort of money. And, you know, it's something that would go to the scrapyard. That's simple as, that's, you know, short of having a fortune spent on it. So the massive driving factor is to try and get people who, you know, have a passion for the classic mini, who effectively will never be able to afford to buy one, getting them into that ownership experience. Obviously, there's the, you know, to keep the Mini going, there's quite a few collectors of Minis now, which we've also got to be very careful of. You know, we don't want people, because they are becoming more and more rare, we don't want people like me buying up 200 Minis.
Yeah, as you're dreaming to do, yeah.
Yeah, that sit in a museum and are never used. You know, they're not, and the people who are only, the only people who are ever going to come and see them are Mini enthusiasts who know about the, you know, your general public isn't going to find out about the Mini Museum, and it, or, you know, depending on the, how good your social profile is. But generally, you know, it's about that, keeping them on the road, keeping them out,
sure.
Keeping them in the public profile. And obviously with my, my fortunate position with the social media side of things, that allows me to be able to give something back. And I think for me, you know, UK Minis has never made me any money. In actual fact, it's cost me a fortune, if I'm being honest.
I was going to say, I can imagine. I was my
it's cost me a fortune. And, you know, people, you know, you always get the naysayers. I get people messaging me all the time saying, oh, you sat in your ivory tower, your car collection and all the rest of it. And actually, you know, I work my bollocks off for every car that I have had, the pleasure and, you know, of being able to purchase. And having given UK Minis, you know, coming up to 3 years of my life. And when I say, you know, I have several businesses, so I'm a busy guy. I post 3 times a day, every day, without fail. And I answer every single message that I get every single day, plus emails, plus, you know, shout outs and can you help me? And can you ask me this technical question? And you know, I'll be sitting in bed at 2 o'clock every morning answering questions. And you get to a stage where you think, actually, you know, for this to continue to grow to where I'd like it to be, you know, there has to be some remuneration for that. So I think that offering, you know, merchandise, stickers and all that type of thing that I've never really done in UK Minis ownership of under me is something that we're now, you know, upping the rate of. But sure. The main focus is obviously the competitions. Everybody knows that there's a gazillion competition giveaways out there, and they're questionable at best.
Well, they're, as you said, there are tens of thousands. There are great ones and there are some very dodgy ones. But I think you've hit the nail on the head where what I like about what you're doing is effectively, yes, giving back to the community in the sense where keeping the icon alive because, you know, okay, fine, not everyone's going to win. There's one winner of each giveaway, each competition. And so you are going to spend money and you might not get a return. But for that person that does win, they might not have been able to get out there and actually buy that Mini for themselves because either they've been priced out or they don't have the know-how or whatever it might be. And so this gives them a chance to get hold of a car that maybe they could love, would have loved. And so that I think is fantastic. And then I think it's a fun way to also open up that Mini community because sometimes I enter giveaways for things that I don't even want. Like I think that's just like a general society thing. Like sometimes I see it and I'm like, I don't really want a McLaren 570S, but heck, I'll enter the giveaway. Yeah. Or a holiday to Barbados when COVID wasn't around. So, you know, I think that's the other benefit. And that's why I wanted to help bring exposure to this is that I'm not the most knowledgeable guy on classic Minis. I'm not the biggest classic Mini fanboy. Of course, I know Italian Job and lots of other popular culture references, and I think they look great. And from a rallying point of view, I love it. But I probably wasn't going to go out there and buy myself a Mini at any point in life. However, I have looked at some of the later ones, like the last runs, the one like Shmi had, which we should talk about in a second. But you know, but if there's a giveaway, I'm always intrigued because I'm like, heck, like I could get a car on the insane cheap. And so let's get into that now. Let's get into the nitty-gritty for a second. This latest giveaway, ticket prices, are we there yet? Because I know that every single giveaway is slightly different. So talk me through this actual one.
Yeah, so effectively, well, we have two live at the moment. We have a Binny.
We have a Binny.
Which will move over very, very quickly. But effectively, it is a very, very special Mini. So there's a company in 2001 when the Mini was launched that was created called Z-Max. You'll know them because they do specialize in Porsches and Jags and stuff like that now, and BMW. Massive in Germany, always been quite a big business. But anyway, they were the first people to really get their hands on the new Mini. And they created four show cars effectively to take around to Geneva and, you know, wherever to promote their brand. So we currently have one of those four. They were all different. So it was a convertible. There was the Cooper S that I've got and then two others. And this particular car I've been trying to get my hands on from a private collection for some years. And David Lorenz, the guy that owned it, finally gave it up to me a couple of months ago, and I've had some fantastic times in it. It's just a spectacular car. They can have a look at all the details on that, and it's me testing the waters effectively with my followers and UK Minis to see if the Bini is potentially, because obviously a lot of our younger followers are following me because of the Bini content. So I think what it does is it's me testing the water. Currently, it's not good.
It's not proving as popular or as successful as the classics.
Yeah, but, you know, I sort of expect that, to be totally honest. And, you know, this for me is a learning curve. So, you know, yeah, check it out. It is a spectacular piece of machinery.
I think there's a chance some of my audience might prefer that to your secondary offering.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and from my side, because, you know, I'm definitely more of a Bini guy, and your audience probably going to lynch me now for saying that. But I just got out of a Clubman JCW. I love the thing. I thought it was great. So, I think, you know, you might have some luck, or fingers crossed, on the Bini side of things.
So that is currently one ticket. So there's 1,000 tickets and they're $14.99.
$14.99.
You've got a one in chance, you know, one in 1,000 chance of winning at $14.99. Obviously, if you buy two or three tickets, you know, your chances increase multiple. We've had three winners so far, all of obviously classic Minis. So we had a 1275 Clubman, which was a supercharged engine. So that was a particularly, Clubmans are very hard to get hold of in nice condition. So that was the very first. That was called Bini. That was won by a guy in Minster-on-Sea, a Mr. Luke Sawyer. The perfect winner in my mind. Not owned a Mini for a long time. Couldn't afford one. His dream car, basically.
Amazing, perfect, dreamy.
So his dream came true. The second winner was a 998, so just under a 1 litre. And what I'm trying to do is give variance. Mostly for insurance purposes, really, because if a 17-year-old wins a 1275 supercharged Mini, they're not going to get insured now.
Oh, I was going to say. That. That was the one thing I was going to ask about at the end.
Yeah, so I think, you know, so I've got to be, you know, mindful of my audience, effectively, and my audience goes from probably, I don't know, 13 years old or something, up to 60, you know, 60 plus who are collecting Minis.
Sure.
So that was called Orb, and that was a modified car painted in Ford RS blue. Ooh, it just looked spectacular.
Now that was
won by a guy from Coventry who is currently stuck in Australia because of COVID.
Oh, no way.
But while he's been stuck there, he's met a girl and fallen in love and is staying out there. So the car is going to Australia.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
It's on the water as we speak.
What a story.
It's being delivered to Coventry and I think it was shipped. Oh, actually, I think it goes tomorrow. I think it's the 7th. I think he was aiming to ship it.
Okay.
Again, the perfect winner. Was a Mini owner. He was, I think he's 32. Adam Pauly, his name is.
Great story.
So he won number two. Number three was another Clubman. So that was a 1340. So when I'm referring to these numbers, that's the CCs of the engine. And that one was that had a stage three race engine in it.
Wow.
So about 90 brake horsepower at the wheels, which in a Mini that has two bucket seats in it and weighs about 600 kilos is
hilarious.
Is fun.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And I can guarantee that you'll never get in anything other than a Mini and smile like you will in a Mini.
Especially if you've got an engine like that.
Yeah, you've driven some spectacular cars, but I can guarantee that getting in a Mini, you will never smile as much.
Amazing.
So yeah, that was won by, who was that one by? That was won by a guy called Andrew Walter, and he's in Devon.
Okay.
So he's in Taunton in Devon, and that was delivered, that was our last one, that was delivered, not Monday, just gone, the Monday prior, so about 2 weeks ago. So yeah, back onto the two that we've got live, obviously the Z Max Mini 2002, obviously done I think it's done 45,000 miles just because it was a show car. So it's been, you know, very loosely used, I suppose.
Sure, sure,
and
sure,
David,
sure.
who had it prior to me, has had it for quite a long time. And he used it as his, he owns a really interesting electric car conversion company
nice.
Based in Silverstone. So, and he lives in London. So he was using it back and forward, I think once a month or something. So it's, you know, it's hardly done any miles. And yeah, and then this morning I've put live, it's known as Irene. So she is a Mini 35. So they started at 25. So every 5 years, Mini released anniversary models effectively. On her 35th year, it was the Mini 35. And it came in came in two forms, two different colors. And this particular one is what's called Nevada Red. It's actually quite similar to my top I've got on. It's a stunning color.
Amazing. More burgundy almost than red. Not Ferrari red, bit of a deeper dark.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like Cooper solid red, like the Ferrari red. It's a real, it's almost like a purple,
nice.
Almost, I would describe it.
Yeah, nice.
It's, but your followers will see it on the website when they go and have a look. Now that has got a 1380 stage 4 John Speed race engine. So John Speed are a Mini specialist that are based in the Midlands near Coventry, and they build race Minis basically. So this one has got a 1380 stage 4 race engine, which I won't bore you with all the details, but it's got high lift cams and all sorts of things in it. And that's just come back from a Mini specialist in Bradford called Ace Speed, which is, you may well know him. You might have come across him at some point in your life.
I haven't, unfortunately.
Andy Ace Harrison, his name is. So he's a bit of a guru within the historic race Mini scene. And his day-to-day business is renovation, restoration and tuning of Mini. So that, it's just come back from there literally on Saturday. And that's put out 85 brake horsepower at the wheels. So that's about 110 ish, at the flywheel, which in a Mini.
You're going to move. Yeah.
Yeah. It's bonkers and it sounds absolutely insane. That's currently on at. So when I initially released them, I always put them on an early bird sale. So that's normal price of $19.99 down to $17.99. And obviously you're lucky. Listeners are going to get a discount, which I'm sure we'll reveal at some point in this chat.
Well, no, let's reveal it now. Let's reveal it now because I think it's worthwhile to try and promote and push people. Of course, those of you watching on YouTube, I'll just quickly say that there is a link below. Obviously, you can go and head over straight across. Those of you listening, I will be posting across my social media platforms links. Check it out. Obviously, you can also head over to the UK Minis page on Instagram to find your links to be able to swipe up. But for those of you that have tuned in and have been listening up until this point, which is hopefully most of you, Sam can now share. Yeah, we're getting a very exclusive and exciting offer for you listeners.
Yeah, so 20% effectively. So that's using code STG for ease. Let's hope that works.
Yeah.
So all they need to do is when effectively at checkout, it's just there's a coupon section where they bang in STG.
Perfect.
And it will give them 20% discount. And I'll probably leave that running permanently.
Amazing.
So,
well, thank you very, very much. Yeah, because of course people are going to come back and tune into this episode, you know, and hopefully always be able to go and check out the latest and greatest giveaway. And as I say, I'm a big fan of it. Obviously, you know, great to collaborate and team up on this. I've kind of already explained my reasons for doing so. I think you've made it clear as well from your side. And I think it just feels like a good and honest giveaway. Of course, as yeah, there is a financial incentive on all sides, but, you know, not only for you, but for the winner to pay, you know, theoretically less than 20 quid and end up with a Mini, which we've been discussing is probably going to be appreciating in value in whatever shape or form.
Yeah,
so
I would say it's probably worth touching on that point, actually. I think even, you know, some of your followers, yours are probably more petrol heady than, you know, let's say some more of your contemporaries. But there is a financial benefit here to the guy, to the winner. You know, obviously, perfectly, I want real, true Mini enthusiasts to win these cars. But inevitably, at some point, somebody who has 10 Minis, who doesn't need another Mini, is going to end up winning it. And that will either then be offered back to me, which, you know, I'll endeavor to buy it and put it into my private collection or move it on, however that works. But, you know, I would say the average value of the cars we've given away so far is probably £15,000.
Amazing.
So, you know, so straight away for 15 quid. And actually, Vinny, the supercharged Mini, was one for a tenner. There really is a financial benefit.
Yeah, you're ending up with a great car, but a car that, you know, yeah, is definitely more valuable than the ticket.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, from my point of view, obviously, and from a social media point of view and all the rest of it, and moving forward, you know, we want real, true, genuine Mini lovers to win them. But inevitably, you know, the more that we do...
You're going to have people with different reasons for doing so. But I think the other key thing is, you know, that as you touched on it briefly, is that they are limited tickets. So those of you that liked particularly the two cars, the Bini or the classic that Sam mentioned, that are live now, go and jump on that, because the tickets are limited. They will sell out at a certain point. So if you are particularly interested in either of those, you need to go and do that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth mentioning as well. Us compared to these other competitions that we've already discussed The prices are reasonable. The return is spectacular. The prizes are obviously the best that I can find. But the numbers are very low. And I've not had an issue yet where if people go to the website, which is ukminis.co.uk, there's a T's and C section, which, you know, all these things have to have. But effectively that states that anything in excess of 80% of ticket sales will be drawn. I had one that sold, it didn't get to the 80%, but, you know, I used my discretion and we drew it anyway. So for me, it's about, it's a real opportunity. It's a real genuine competition. We've got a winner section on our page as well. And obviously they all have their own Instagram handles that, you know, people can go and check that it's genuine, and you know that these people are driving around in these incredible cars for no money.
There we go. Well, look, mate, it's been fascinating having you on. I feel like I've learned something at least about the world of classic Minis, and that I can definitely stir some pots if I ever walk into a classic Mini meet and just start talking about bins. Hopefully, listeners, viewers, you are excited about this opportunity. Definitely go and check out the UK Minis Instagram page no matter what, but ukminis.co.uk as well for the giveaway. And, you know, no matter when you're listening to this episode, go and check it out, because whilst the two cars that Sam mentioned might be gone, hopefully there'll be other cars, and fingers crossed, in the not too distant future, the Mini Museum that you can also go and check out once. Are museums allowed to be open yet? I feel like we're still a little bit, I'm not sure. Haven't got the go ahead yet.
I spoke to Gade and British Motor Museum last week actually, and they said probably the 15th of July, I think.
Keep all of our fingers crossed. Thank you for making the time, thank you for dialing in, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up properly face to face soon enough. And I think I need to come and drive one of these cars, right? I need to come and have a go, maybe even compare a few, because that's definitely something which you haven't done on the channel yet, so that could be good fun.
I'd definitely recommend that, because I've got access to a higher booster engine rear wheel drive classic Mini, 400 brake.
Oh my god. So, I'll end up in a tree.
That could be a Goodwood special, something like that, can take you and scare the life out of you.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, as I say, stay healthy, stay safe. Thank you very much. And we'll catch up soon.
Pleasure. Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.